Okay, so welcome everyone to today's lecture on virtual machines, and yeah, we start right off where we left last time. So you might want to recall the general setting of what we're doing right now. So in these prolog programs, we have these definitions of clauses that correspond somewhat to defining a procedure, and in the body of the procedure you will find several goals that occur there that have to be passed in order for the procedure call or predicate call to pass. So this is a sequence of goals that the prolog program has to process. And there's different kinds of these goals. For once, we had other predicate calls that were issued in them. We have talked about how that works quite a while ago. And then we have talked about the second kind of goals that there is, which are these unifications. And for unifications, in order to pass, we had to make sure that they are actually unifiable in the sense that their structure is compatible with each other with respect to these degrees of freedom represented by the variables in there can assume the form of the structure found in the corresponding place in the other term so that they can be at some point matched, thus yielding bindings to those free variables and giving kind of a structural context of when that particular unification goes through. And well, there's also potential for failure in there, so there's some kind of backtracking involved in case the matching doesn't go as planned for that particular clause. And in those cases we have learned that there's other clauses that make up the definition of a particular predicate that can instead be tried. So we brute force our way through all possible alternatives for a particular predicate. And in this process we have looked at a particular procedure, which would be this unify runtime facility, let's say like that for now. And the purpose of that was that to be applied when there is a particular unification term like this one here, where we would which would be interpreted in the following way. We would find an already existing term be put on the pushdown, followed by another term with which to unify the former term by then calling unification. This would lead to two references on top of the stack, both of them pointing to some structure represented on the heap of the virtual machine, and then we would recursively step down into the structure of each of those things and try to match them together. And yeah, there's the possibilities of them being actually the same, or possibilities of one being more liberal than the other, so that it can take the form of its corresponding structure in the other part. And just roughly sketch how that worked was like this. And we had this rather longish function, which had some base cases, like both references being actually referring to identical items. This is the easy case, it's always true. Then there we were having subcases where one of the references was unbound, which would facilitate our life in the sense that we can then redirect this reference to whatever the other corresponding reference would point to, or even just point to each other in case that both of them would be not initialized right now. There always had to be this feature of having an occurrence check, whether the variable to be bound is occurring somewhere in the term to which it would have to be bound, which would be some not possible, so would also lead to failure. And then there's the actual cases where we do the match in case of, for example, an atom, which can only be matched by an atom of the same identity, or, well, some structure for which the constructor is actually matching equally, and then we would say that the whole thing is unified by just delegating to the unification of the children of the parameter positions iterated through. And yeah, this would give us the unification for one level inside of these terms, and this possibly then iterates until at some point we reach variables or atoms. During the process, there's always a possibility for failure, so we usually have the possibility of returning false, thus issuing a backtrack, which we did not specify so far how that worked. We will go into that later. And for that to actually work, we would need to keep book of all the changes that we do by calling this trail function, which would put the addresses of variables that have been bound during that part of the algorithm. For example, here, where we would bind something to the heap object in V, we would also enter V into our change list, which would then later be used for possible backtracking in case the thing goes amiss. So this is the general picture of what we have as a kind of general algorithm for performing the unification. And so this is the point where we stand right now. So here we continue now with the idea of, well, in this procedure, if you follow that, what will usually happen when we go through one of these unifications is we'll fetch some reference of an already existing term on the push down. Well, we cannot do anything about that, that is necessary. But then what we will do is we will immediately follow that by building up a new term, one of these terms that occur in this unification equality, and then immediately start deconstructing that again and popping that away from the stack. So you might wonder whether all this build up and tear down, build up, tear down is really a thing that you need to do, particularly since this costs execution time, of course. So, well, rather than building up a term and then running through this term again and use it to deconstruct itself, you could rather try to directly deconstruct the reference that you have put up before on the stack with just the instructions that would ordinarily have used to build up the term before. So instead of building up a new structure on the heap, you would just use these instructions to directly run through the peers structure and immediately either unify or backtrack. So for this new, more performant idea, you would try to avoid constructing the subterms and instead generate instructions that directly do the unification. And yeah, let's have a look at how that looks like. For this purpose, we introduce a new code generation scheme, this code U for performing unification, so U, and the put remains the same as before. So this is our anchor. We cannot do anything about that. We already have this thing constructed in memory, and that's also fine. So now for the unification code generation, what do we feature there? So there's of course this base case of doing unification with an atom. Use a special purpose instruction there, and we can already imagine how to do that. Then there's the unification for the different variable sorts, and those are the elements that don't have any substructure, so they should be locally doable at in some way at least. So let's have a look at how we do them, and there's of course a few others which we'll see later on. So first of all, the unification with an atom. For that we have this new instruction uAtom, and this one will usually, well, there's several cases of what unification with an atom can do to your underlying reference. So what can happen? Of course, there's the good case where the underlying structure, which has to be unified with our thing, is already an atom of particularly the kind that we want to unify with. So this is the good case. In this case, unification goes through. We don't have to do any binding or anything like that. We can just pop the topmost stack cell and be done without performing any side effects. The little bit less but still quite nice case is the one where we find that the underlying reference goes to an unbound variable. So this case here, this means that we can just bind with whatever we unify with. And this is in our case a single heap item. So what we will do is we will construct such a thing in here with a new AA call, and fill that in as the new reference for the reference that we had to match against. So yeah, that's what we do here. Of course, we still have to keep book of that there has been a change to reference of address V, so we put that into the trailing list and then just continue on. So this is just introducing side effect, and the side effect is introducing the atom with which we wanted to unify. And in every other case, well, this is not a suitable case for unification anymore. In that sense, we have found our way out by backtracking. So this is every other case. So this kind of inlines a few cases of the general algorithm and does them immediately whenever we have to, or whenever we realize that we have to do unification with an atom. Just pulling out the relevant parts of the unification algorithm like that. And in a similar way, we go on with the others. So there's unification with an uninitialized variable. So we find something on top of the stack which has to be unified with what we got in our input is an uninitialized variable. And well, this is probably one of the nicest cases there is, because an uninitialized variable just has to be initialized then with whatever is on top of the stack, and this can be easily done by just setting the reference to whatever has been pointed to on top of the stack, and is easily implemented this way. There's no way to fail this. Uninitialized variables can just be used. Then there's the unification with the anonymous variable, which is even nicer, because if we don't have to refer to the current substructure at any point anymore, well, this just leads to we accept whatever there is on top of the stack as a reference and just pop it away, and yeah, that's what we do. Then there's the unification with an initialized variable, so referring variable, and this means that we have on top of the stack the thing against which we can't do anything, which points to some X thing, and we have variable at stack position I, so frame pointer plus I, that points to potentially something different here. And well, there's no direct way to immediately decide what to do here, so the only thing that we can then do is to, well, that is to say, well, that is a case where we really need runtime system support. The runtime system has to descend into whatever these cells point to and perform the actual real unification algorithm, and this is also what is really done here. So the specification of this unify function was there for a reason, because for this implementation of uref we actually really need that. So the top of the stack is unified with whatever the pre-initialized variable points to in the end with the deref thing. And yeah, with that, then this either creates a failure or will perform some side effect. So in the end, we can then pop away the top of the stack. So this defers work to the runtime function unify. Yeah, so that is the kind of unlucky case where we still have to do a lot of things during the runtime. So far, these were the kind of leaves in our structure. So what is it about the intermediate nodes? Well, there's these structure nodes, which we also would have to unify at some point. So what can we do for those? And unification runs in pre-order traversal on the structure, so we have to somehow do that also in our special purpose code U, code generation. And this is what we find being done over here. So the structure has to be compared to whatever is on there. So this is done by the first instruction, which is this ustruct fna, and has as a component the constructor for the predicate, as well as the predicate, the constructor for the term, and some address here. So there's again several cases that can happen here during that thing. So there is, of course, failure always, but this usually goes into some kind of backtracking in its implementation, so this will not directly be reflected here in this part of the code generation scheme. There's the case that we find that there is another constructor to be unified with this one, and if this is the same constructor in that sense, we then just have to delegate to unification of the parameters of the constructor, and this is the part that we see here. and then continue there. And then there's the other option that is out there, that the thing with which we want to unify is not actually a constructor, but introduces a degree of freedom to match against, and this would be an uninitialized variable, for example. And for this one, we then would actually have to create a new instance of this constructor to bind to this variable. And this is what is done in this part over here. So these are the two cases where we don't fail. So let's have a look at each of them. Maybe start with the one where we construct a new structure to bind to the reference. And this usually works whenever the free variables in the when the variable with which to be which the term is to be bound is not occurring in the variables of the term itself. So this is what is first done here with occur check macro check, and this is done on the variables of the term to be matched against. And after that is gone through, what then is done is a new term that corresponds to the term from over here is constructed on the heap, and its address is then in the end bound to the free variable with which we would have to do the unification. And after that we can just fall through into the whatever comes behind part. So this is the unification with a free variable. The other part is the part where we do the step-by-step matching of the parameters with the parameters from the structure that has already been there. And there we have to make sure to actually reach each of the elements in the structure. And yeah, well, this is ensured by these sun1 to sun n instructions that we introduce, and then we do repeat our unification code generation for each of the subterms from the pattern here. And in the end we will leave this particular structure here and continue right in B. So this is when everything has gone right, we can then just continue with matching. So this has a lot of new instructions in there. So let's have a look at what they do. First of all, maybe again the part with the occurring check. So we need to make sure that the variable on top of stack doesn't occur in the actual term with which we want to bind that. So in order to do so, we extract all the, well, it suffices to check the or we only need to check against the initialized variables of the actual term. The other one are actually occurring newly in this term, so they shouldn't exist as something that is already bound, so there should not be any interference with that. So we can just take the initialized variables of a term. This will give us a list of integers as the offsets to the frame pointer, and with those we can then fill a list of actual instructions instead of a macro on a list, and each of them will just go through, well, we'll just do this check macro that we have introduced already, or the check function that we have introduced already for the virtual machine during the actual specification of the unify thing. So there was this check algorithm, and this just runs through the structure and checks whether the variable occurs in there. So, yeah, that is that. And if it does, well, this is a case for backtracking. The bind was the thing which we did in the end when we realized that occurrence check runs through, and we have then constructed the term on the heap. Now this leaves us with a reference to the newly constructed term on top of the stack, and all we need to do now is bind this reference to whatever lies beneath, because this is what we have to unify with. So we what we will do is we will essentially first of all point redirect this thing to the newly generated term, and then remove all traces of what we have worked with from the stack in order to just continue with matching. Yeah, and for the part where we have to match one structure with another, we do this pre-order traversal thingy with the help of these SON instructions that will take care of the recursive descent for the children of this constructor. So there's this test for the compares the root node with the construct with the constructor in question. So this is this part. Then we do the recursive descent into the children, and in the end we just pop the stack and go beneath. So just as a reminder how the whole thing looks, there's first the test whether the reference matches the current constructor structure, and then we do this recursive descent into the children with the SON instructions, and in the end go up back to the father level and continue with the matching code. So we need ustruct, SON, and up being defined. So ustruct then has the two cases that I indicated already. So there's the case of the that the reference to unify with is an actual uninitialized reference so far. This is this case over here with R and nothing as the so the uninitialized reference, and in that case we will then continue with the code that builds up the actual structure which has been pointed to by the A part. Let's have a look at which one is which. This one here. So here we get the pointer to the for the construction code, which will then end up in the PC, and everything else remains the same. So this is that this case here. Then there's the other case where we find that there's also a structure of the right form on top of the stack. So this is this case here, where well, ustruct just falls through and then continues unification with all the children. So there's nothing actually to do, and well, this is reflected in that part. And for everything else, there is just backtracking to do, because these are the cases that are not unifiable with a structure. So, yeah, for the recursive descent into the children, we need to process the struct without really popping away the reference to the structures so far, because there might be other children following. So what usually happens is we have this SON I that emanates from a pointer to a structure, and it will pull out references to the children of the structure, depending on the index that is given. So it will go this index far into the children of the structure and take whatever it reaches here, like this, and puts a reference that follows exactly the same thing on top of the stack for the further unification calls to work with. So yeah, that's that. That's the son I thing, and then there's the upb, which does the does away with the reference to the structure. This usually comes at the end of a matching process, so it removes the structure and then continues with the code after the matching of this structure piece. So yeah, upb removes what it finds on top here and then just takes the continuation address and puts it in there. And this is usually the address that we have generated for whatever follows the construction for the thing that we could put into uninitialized variables. So this all together is giving quite a lengthy code section. This might look a little bit scary compared to what we had before, but this just, well, it, each of these instructions pulls out a little bit of the logic that otherwise would have been in the runtime section. So in terms of runtime, this should even make it a little bit more easy, because a few of the decisions and case distinctions that had been in the general unification algorithm is now, well, since it's predetermined by the actual structure of the term with which to unify, this takes away a few of these checks in that sense. So for this unification to work, this would be the code U term part. You would always have to consider that there already is some kind of reference on the stack with which this whole thing would have to match then. But anyway, let's have a look at that. So this is a pre-order run on that term, encoded by, first of all, this new u-struct thing that does the unification on the f structure with the construction part being stored at A1, and the part directly following the u-struct thing would be the one that does the matching in case that there is a structure found in the reference on top of the stack. So the build-up code, first of all, this does the check whether whether the variable with which to bound, which already resides on the stack, occurs in the bound variables of the term there. So this is just a check of one, because this is the only thing that is so far already initialized. And then what is done is this whole term is constructed, which works in the post order way. So we do the put reference here for this one, the put var for this one, the put struct for this subterm, put atom for this one, put var for this part, and then put struct for the whole thing. Okay, and then we can issue bind in order to bind that to the variable from before. So this is just the part that does the binding in case that this u-struct from before hits an unbound variable. Now, the other case where the whole thing does not fail is the one where we hit another constructor, and I see myself forced to close the door now. So there's first of all, in order for this whole thing to fall through, instead of doing the fallback, we must have found that the structure already referred to by the top of the stack is matching with that particular constructor F of arity 3. So only then we fall through to just then continue with doing the unification with each of the sons. And well, turns out that there's again a structure to be to match with. So this is what this is what we do here in this U struct. So this is again a unification with a struct, this time with G2. In case that there would be an unbound variable, we will have to build it up at A2, and well, this is what we essentially find in this part here. So this again is an occurrence check, then a put ref for the X, put var for the I, put struct for the whole G, and then tries to bind, or does the actual binding. So this is the code to go there, and yeah, that's that then. Then where are we? Yeah, that's already the right one. So apart from that, this would then continue if there is also a term of constructor G of arity 2 there. We would then go in the sons of this one, which would be first of all the a reference to match with, so uref 1. The second son is a free variable, so this is u var 2, and this, if all of that goes through, then we can finish up with up b2 and continue with b2 with the rest of f's parameters. So B2 is then the second son, which should be this A thingy, which would mean we have to unify with atom A, and then focus on this third thing, which is this Z, which is 3, so U over 3, and then we go up out of whatever F is and reach this B1 and continue with whatever else is in there. So this is how that works. So you, in this, now you can see the two approaches of what we have to do here. There's this post-order approach and the pre-order approach for running through these terms. The post-order one to build up the terms in a nice way, such that we can run through them with the pre-order approach. So yeah, that is what we usually do in these unification thingies. Okay, so this gives us now special purpose code generation for doing the unification on the fly as far as possible. Just for two bound references, we have to still rely on the runtime unification process. So all of that now gives us the components that we need for talking about actual clause implementation. So remember what clause was? Clause was the definition of what a predicate can look like, giving us one variant of how to execute a particular predicate call. And what is there to execute would be a sequence of goals, each of which could be either another predicate call or a unification process. So what the clause then needs to do for us is we would find one of these definitions, clause definition, and this would have to make sure that there's enough space to put references to bind things to on the stack, and then we would have to evaluate the goals of the body, and then in the end clean up the stack frame whenever possible. We'll see what that means in the end. So yeah, the clause looks like the way that it does here. So when we have to allocate the stack space for locals, what is are the things that we have to take care of? Well, in the locals, we find, of course, usually the formals from over there. So the x1 to xk from the parameters should end up being in the stack space for the locals, and then we might find further locals being introduced in the goals as local variables of that particular goal sequence in this clause, and this would also have to go into the set of locals forming this x1 to xm, and each of these locals just works by enumerating the variables successively, so there's no real art involved in that. So for the translation of one of these clauses then, what we have to make sure is that there is enough space for that. We have seen there's no real size difference. We have made sure with our separation between heap and stack that we only keep references to things on the stack, thus we never use more than just one cell per thing. So we can just put m cells on top of the stack with this push env and be done with that, and continue with the goal code generation for goal 1 to goal n, and in the end maybe try to get rid of the stack frame that we have introduced. So, yeah, this is, I guess, not particularly difficult. Push env just reserves m cells on top of the push down. So that's this push env thing. So let's have a look at how a concrete clause would have to be translated. So there's this clause over there. So what are the local variables to be introduced? So there is x, there's y. This is the same x, already, so we mark it with this overline thing. Then there's an x1 as a local variable. And this is a reusage of the thing from before. This is y. So this gives us 3. So we end up with a push env of 3. And yeah, so the clause starts with this, this push env 3 and ends with a pop env. And in between, we have to generate the code for the goals. So code g for this one here is a predicate call. Predicate calls start with a mark of the address of where to continue, and a call in the end, and in between we do the construction of the parameters, which is fairly simple here. So there's a reference because this x comes from the parameters, thus we assume it is already initialized. And an x1, which is a new variable, so we put var 3 on there. And after the predicate is called, we continue at a, so there's another predicate call, started with a mark b, with the continuation address being here at the end of the goal set. And this mark belongs to this call from over here, calling to a. And this now works on putref of 3, which is the now initialized variable 3, and putref 2, which is the y from the clauses parameter crosses predicates parameter. So this is what gets constructed there. So far, this looks pretty nice. So in order to then actually represent what a predicate can be, well, predicate is usually considered to consist of a sequence of clauses. So a predicate consists of several clauses. So there's this part where we have the non-deterministic choice in this part. So, of course, the special case that makes our life simple is the case where we only have one particular choice for this. It's pretty obvious what we have to do. This just means that the code, the predicate code for our thing would just consist of the label being introduced and then the clause code for R1. Yeah, there's not so much about that, but if we have more than one clause, we need to actually make sure that we offer enough facilities for backtracking. And this opens now the so far black box thing, backtracking function in our code. So, how does backtracking look from our perspective? So the this is called usually when the unification at some point is not yielding meaningful results. So we at some point uncover facts that make our unification impossible. So these are the places where the backtrack is usually called. So this is now distributed throughout this general unify specification, as well as the implementation of several instructions that we have had a special purpose instruction for unification. What it should do is it should undo things that we have already done in the sense of rollback to the latest goal where there is another choice possible. So this is a thing that we introduce as a backtracking point, and we'll call a backtracking point from there on. And since we now talk about the predicates being or consisting of several different clauses as alternatives to each other, we already get an intuition that backtracking has something to do with these different alternatives, and yeah, indeed, in, that is the case. So each of these backtracking points will have to lead to another alternative clause to consider for that particular predicate call. So apart from that, what also was around there is this trail thingy that was there to take note of the variables that have been bound during a particular instance of unification, and this would have to be also working, collaborate with the backtracking process in order to undo the things that have been bound between the latest backtracking point and the current the current configuration of the machine. So, how could such a trail thing work? Well, for that we introduce another facility in the machine, which is this new memory section, where we actually store the identity of the references that have been bound to something throughout our program run. So this is another stack-like structure with the so-called trail pointer that points to the latest modified reference. And what you usually find within the structure is the identity of references in terms of addresses on the heap where we have done some unification at some point. So this purely contains addresses and is managed throughout this trail pointer and pointers that we will see a little bit later on. So what we also need in order for the whole thing to work is to fall back to a point where we can do another decision of what to evaluate next. So this is a thing where we need to drop our current nesting of predicate calls until a point where we resume action and continue with new frame nesting. So it makes sense to quickly fall back to an earlier frame, and this is what we do with the backtracking pointer BP, which we set up to point to the last frame where an actual choice has been done and needs to be undone and done differently. So this is what this new register BP now does. So we're rapidly introducing new registers. So this BP thing is here a new pointer that points somewhere on the stack. So this backtracking point we said is a point in the stack hierarchy in terms of a predicate frame where we possibly return to do another choice there. So this doing another choice is realized similar as we have had for the as we introduced a way for dealing with this exception thing, where we said that if we have run into a dead end, we have to come back to a different outcome, and that is done with this negative continuation address that we have already talked about. So this is now giving us the complementary to the usual positive continuation address, and yeah, it kind of gives us an idea of what also resides in the frame of a procedure here. So since we have also introduced a few new registers, we will then put the values of these registers also in the frame. And yeah, so this now gives us how the organizational cells in the frame really look like. So there's the positive continuation as well as a negative continuation, with the positive continuation being reached whenever the unification process during this predicate call was actually successful, and the negative continuation being used when the backtracking has unwound every possibility from its goal predicates, and has come to the conclusion that this complete clause is not unifiable with whatever it would have to match against. So we would then continue at this negative continuation with another clause and brute force our unification through this one. So this is this positive continuation and negative continuations, and then there's a lot of old registers to put on there. So there's the old frame pointer, the old heap pointer, the old trail pointer, and the old backtrack pointer that needs to be stored in there. So it's just, as usual, old instances of registers that go in there, and together they make up the six organizational cells of these things. Okay. So throughout the next few instructions, we will somehow modify these things and read them out or write to them. So instead of mentioning these kind of cryptic terms of stack at position whatever, we would like probably to work with more readable versions of that. So we introduce the macros that introduce this positive continuation, negative continuation as an actual term, as well as these old versions of pointers, and they just resolve to stack addresses. So much for that. Yeah, and of course depending on which side of the assignment they appear at. This will mean saving of the register or restoring of the register. So, the backtracking process itself, how does it look like? So, if we backtrack in a certain machine configuration, what this will do is, well, we have kept this backtracking pointer for exactly this purpose. We want to revert the frame pointer to this backtracking pointer to quickly jump to the frame where there was actual choice for an alternate clause. Same goes for the heap pointer. We will have to revert that to the heap pointer that belonged there. Then the belonged to that particular frame. Then we need to perform an actual reset of all the side effects that we have done so far. And side effects have worked like, well, setting of particular, well, we bound particular variables. We also introduced new ones, so we will have to do something about all of that. So the newly bound or the newly introduced ones are the ones that we usually forget with this instruction above, where we reset the heap pointer. So this will just remove a lot of things from the heap. These were things that have been introduced between the point in time where this HP old was valid and our current state, and this is usually between the setting of the backtracking point and our current state. So this HP setting to HP old will remove all these old references, and the only ones that we now have to deal with is the ones that have not been added anew but have been modified and live beneath our current level in the heap, and this has to be done with a special purpose function reset. And apart from that, what we then do is we also have to reset the trail pointer to discard the trail of everything that has been introduced between the state PO, TP old and now. And then we can, after we've cleaned up, we can then continue with the negative continuation of this frame as our new PC. So that is that. So much about backtracking. Now, of course, we still have to think about how the undoing of the trail of the reference bindings has to or can somehow work. Well, we have said that we can just forget by resetting the heap pointer to a certain thing, but for references that have been earlier on in our life cycle and don't live in the upper parts of the heap, we still have to undo them manually, and this is what is done by running through the through the addresses on the heap between those references. So maybe it helps a little bit to look at what the trail actually really does. So trail is a thing that we usually call whenever we have updated a particular reference in the heap. So we hand this reference over to the actual trail thing, which will then enter the address into the trail store like this, and keep it there for further resetting until at some point we reach a backtracking thing, which will then call this reset between the old TPS value and the new trail pointer, which is then in case each of will evaluate to a reference on the on the trail pointer thing, and so what we will then do is we will run through the trail pointer from y to x, and for each of these things we will check what is on the trail store and use that to create a new uninitialized reference for these things, thus resetting the bindings that we have introduced for these fellows. So yeah, this is what the reset then does in that sense. So all in all, to wrap up with that, the predicate, remember, is a sequence of clauses we've established. So what we still need to do is setting up the actual track point. We need to try out all the alternatives and then in the end delete the backtracking point. So the code for the predicate looks like, of course, the address for the actual predicate, then setting up the backtracking point, deleting it afterwards, and then try out all the different alternatives except for the last one, which we will then do in the end with this jump over here. And for each of these alternatives, we do the clause code generation for R1 to RF. So the magic now happens within this set backtracking point, the try and the delete backtracking point. So I think this is just inlining of the code generation schemes that we have seen so far. So this is the code for the predicate S that has two clauses. So it starts with this SN, sets the backtracking pointer, deletes it again in the end and in between, tries to do the clause code for the first part, which is stored over here in this reserving of one local, marking the code that that does the call, then put the reference there and does the actual call. And after that we just do the popenv. And the second alternative is the last one. So this is what the jump B then does, and this one is unification. So there we do pushenv of the left-hand side, which is just this initialized variable x, and then we will do the this is just the local the space for local variables. Then we do the putref of the variable here, and then do a unification with the atom A, and then continue with popenv. So it's just applying this scheme here. We still need to talk about how this set P looks like. So set backtracking pointer, set BTP, of course. So this set of the backtracking pointer works like, well, we create the entries in the current frame of the heap pointer, trail pointer, and the backtracking pointer, and then set the backtracking pointer anew to point to the current frame pointer, because if the set BTP is called, then the current frame serves as a backtracking point, and thus BP can be reset to the current frame pointer. So that's that. What a try then does is it tries whatever it finds at the address it's given, and if that should fail, then it should fall through to the next alternative in there, which would be then the fall through alternative. So it's easy for try A then. What it then does is it looks at the continuation address, puts it in the negative continuation space in the current stack frame, and apart from that puts the address that it's given into the program counter. And then there's a thing to actually clean up whatever we have done as chaos, in the sense of, well, to delete the current backtracking pointer. This is what we do when we have successfully matched with what we usually do when we run out of alternatives to backtrack to. So if there's only just one last alternative to still be matched with, then we delete the current backtracking point and rely on a previous backtracking point to exist. And we do so by just resetting the backtracking pointer to the its old version, which is the one that has been set before, or, well, maybe the error thing if there is no backtracking point to go to. So, yeah, that's that. I think for the next thing I will need a little bit more time, so I would probably like to continue next time. Also, a thing is, since we are now quite far in the semester, and this is only a 3-hourly lecture and not a 4-hourly lecture, I would from next week on cancel our Monday assignment and our Monday appointment, and instead go to a once a week meeting mode, where we only do the Tuesdays appointments anymore. Okay? So, from now on, we now meet Tuesdays only. So, thank you for your attention, and see you tomorrow.